Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Hard times like
that. Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Tuesday, and we have the full crew. And when I say the full crew, like, this is a really rare and beautiful moment. We have, from the Sporting Tribune, Grant Mona, Brandon Deutsch, Jihei Wiley, Armani Bucket, Jake Dicker. We have not had the whole crew in a long, long time. TikTok superstar Armani Buckets is joining us. So we do have to get his thoughts on the NBA playoffs, because something very fascinating is happening right now. I think we are seeing the next great team in the NBA. Maybe it's hyperbole, but this team has won six straight games to begin the playoffs, and they're doing to the Denver Nuggets what I was hoping and praying that the Lakers would do. I don't know if it's going to be a sweep, but it's looking that way. The Timberwolves have not only taken a 2-0 lead in the Western Conference semifinals against the defending champion Denver Nuggets, but they have done it in such a manner that Jamal Murray is throwing heat packs onto the court. He's not talking to the media post-game, and we may have seen the last Denver Nuggets home game of the season. Our money buckets, I'm going to start with you, just as a man who's really captured the imagination of the NBA during the course of the season on TikTok. Are you surprised by what we're seeing from the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Surprised in the sense that they're ultimately might sweep the champs? Yes. Surprised that they're looking dominant on defense? No, because this is the way that they've looked all season long. I am surprised at just the maturity and the leadership that's coming from a 22-year-old superstar in Anthony Edwards. And that's what's really caught my attention the most. In the post-game press conference yesterday, Anthony Edwards, this is from Dane Moore, who covers the Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards stopped his answer to shout out only Jaden McDaniels' defense. He said, quote, "But I do just want to shout out Jaden McDaniels before I get out of here. He's been phenomenal this whole playoff run, and he probably only had 5 points and took three shots all two games. He doesn't complain. He keeps guarding. He keeps picking up full court." That quote is the identity of Minnesota. Whether Anthony Edwards has 6 points or 60 points, he's going to compete the same way as are the rest of them. It's a joy to watch, Arash. Defense was always back, but this team is really going to put defense back into the NBA in a different way.
You know, it's crazy, Armani Buckets. It's great to see you and, you know, talk to you about this, because you were the one who told me midseason. I'm like, Minnesota's kind of fraudulent, right? We don't tend to see players, teams led by a 22-year-old superstar make a deep run in the playoffs. Usually it goes into that, you know, they're 25, 26, 27 when they start their first, like, huge run, sometimes later, like Jokic, 28, 29. Embiid's still trying to make that happen. Even Tatum's trying to win his first ring. And Edwards is just kind of, I wouldn't say generational, because that's a term we throw around a lot, but a guy that's kind of, I feel like, skipped a couple steps, and he's there at 22, which is crazy. Their defense is really, really excellent. 108.4 defensive rating during the year. It was actually 2 points better than anybody else. Celtics were second. Magic were actually third. And we could see something similar to previous title teams, where last year we had an anomaly with the Denver Nuggets. They were 14th in defensive rating. We don't typically have a team that is, you know, not top 10 in defensive rating win an NBA championship. It's only happened 4 times in the last 22 years. But we could go back to defense in the NBA championship if it's Wolves Celtics. I'm just kind of thinking right now, those are the two teams that look the most dominant. I really hope that selfishly, the Knicks could beat the Boston Celtics, but, you know, maybe I'm just living in fantasy land. But I am surprised. I did think the Denver Nuggets, they went up against a team who actually had moxie. I mean, that's the difference. Actually played defense and it wasn't lazy, wasn't blowing leads. Like, good teams don't blow 30-point leads, like, you know? So, I don't know. Jamal Murray, though, every time he plays the Lakers, he looks like MJ. Anybody else, he looks like Jamal Murray, which is like kind of crazy. But
yeah, listen, that's a big issue for Denver, I feel like, because even in the Lakers series, like, I know he had some clutch shots. I know he had a 20-point game in there. But he was not the same guy. I mean, he really wasn't the same guy that we saw in the Western Conference Finals against the Lakers in 2023. And now, I mean, he went 3 of 18 last night. I mean, that's really not Murray-esque. And I know that calf strain is really bothering him. But what I really saw was just they harassed Denver like I have not seen in probably 3 years before their championship run. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the Wolves have so much length. And this is the other thing that I noticed. They did this without Rudy Gobert, who is probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year. And I feel like maybe Gobert being out threw a wrench into the Nuggets' plans. Because, you know, after game one, what do you do as the home team that loses game one? You go and make adjustments, and you usually win game two, right? You usually come back and say, okay, and the Wolves come back in the press conference, and they say, hey, we got one. We're going to head back home, and it's a split. But I feel like the Nuggets were game planning. How do we get Gobert out of the paint? How do we beat Gobert in the paint? How does Jokic get around Gobert? Because he's a big force down low. And I know that a lot of people give him crap for his stuff in playoffs past. I was one of those. He has been fantastic for the Timberwolves. And with him out, I feel like you had a lot more switchability. Like, Naz Reid blocked Jokic a few times that I have not seen in a while. Jaden McDaniels can, like, all five of the guys on the floor, when you include Nikhil Alexander-Walker into that lineup, all five of those guys can switch between all five positions, and that's what makes it so dangerous. But Armand brought this up. Anthony Edwards is the next face of the league, and I know that Victor Wembanyama is right there for the taking, and he's going to be a menace. But Anthony Edwards has the charisma. He has that mentality. He is just, he is everything that I thought that we would get from a next Kobe or Jordan. I know that there's a lot of comparisons there, but it's not the physical talent for me. It's the mentality that he brings every night. It's the fun that he has on the court. I mean, this guy's 22 years old. He's still a kid, but the way that he's playing it with this ferocity and this looseness against the defending champions is something that I did not see coming this quick. So this Wolves team is serious. And look, even in the other bracket, OKC is serious too. I know Dallas is a good team, but we could have a really young Western Conference Finals here soon.
Yeah. All right, Grant. I want to stick with you because a new idea I have for the Sporting Tribune is putting a live camera on you when Lawrence Frank talks to the media. I wish we had your reaction. Again, no surprise. You called it. He's basically saying, they kind of have to run it back. I mean, because of the cap and the constraints and stuff like that. Kawhi, we knew was going to come back. Same Kawhi who's missed the last four postseasons. Paul George, I guess the one bit of news is that they want him back. They will not, it seems, give him a max contract. I think they'll probably give him more than just about to anyone else in the league. James Harden, I think he'll come back. Anyways, Lawrence Frank addressed the media yesterday. We had our very own Mark Medina there doing like a blow-by-blow, play-by-play. Joey Lynn, the whole crew was there. Your thoughts, Grant? Again, I mean, not surprising that they're basically going to run it back. He knows that they can't bring back the same exact team. But the big two, big three, big four, those guys will likely be back. And the problem is we've seen how this will play itself out.
Yeah, that's the wrong decision by the front office. And they made a wrong decision last year or 2 years ago when they let Isaiah Hartenstein, who is one of the Knicks' best players right now and one of the better centers in the league, go over John Wall. I mean, you got to be kidding. I know I love the John Wall signing at the time because, hey, it's a point guard. The Clippers need a point guard. That was a bad decision, and it's hurting them now. To go again with the same roster, and Lawrence Frank, look, he had to address the media. Every year he does this. They didn't have any exit interviews with the players, which is also very weird. But Lawrence Frank basically said the same thing he said last year. Like, hey, when Kawhi's healthy, he's a top five player, and we believe in that. Well, yeah, but the issue is that he's never healthy. And There are so many Clipper fans this year, Raj. Like last year, you could probably say, like, oh, well, we didn't have Paul George and Kawhi got hurt. Like maybe next year we could do it. And this year, there is so much. This is like peak boiling point for frustration for Clipper fans that I have not seen in a long time. Like I'm going on YouTube and watching some of the Clipper fans that do vlogs for the games and a lot of the fans that I interact with on a daily basis and a bunch of chats, and they are done. They are absolutely out on this core. They want to blow it up. They want something new. I mean, look at what, I mean, I know Lawrence Frank said this, and he said, well, if we look at what the teams in the playoffs are right now, there's a bunch of young, you know, talented players that are the faces of the league. Okay, how do you see that and then say, hey, let's run it back with three guys that are 32 plus? Like, I don't get that philosophy. Is just, it's gone now. The Suns tried it with Beal and Durant. It didn't work. The Lakers tried it in 22 with Westbrook and Ariza and Bazemore and all these older players, and it didn't work. The Clippers have tried it for 5 years, and it didn't work. The Clippers were the oldest team in the NBA this year. It's not going to work. So at what point, and I know you have the new Intuit Dome opening, I get that, but Lawrence Frank's comments are just repeated like year after year, and that is getting to the Clipper fans really deeply, because these fans want to win. Like with these two guys, they were supposed to be championship or bust. And now they're kind of saying like, oh, well, we're going to be good. Like Lawrence Frank really asked the media. He said, well, will we be a top six seed? I don't know. He literally asked the media that question. It's like, how disrespectful is that to the fans? And that's the point that I'm trying to make, is that everything feels just very disrespectful to the hardcore and loyal fans. And it's just such a shame. I'm excited for the Intuit Dome. I'm excited for the redesign. I mean, that can never be taken away, but it's just so disheartening to see the front office act in a way that the fans just don't agree with, and that a lot of people around the NBA don't agree with. So it's tough.
Yeah. Gee, hey, you got to be frustrated as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those fans that's given up. Like, I'm done as well. So I know I said it yesterday, I'll say it again today, I give up. Like, I'm done as well. I would love for them to blow it up. I think we talked about this yesterday with Jake. I would love for them to blow it up and then just start all over. I'm fine with that. Keep Kawhi, fine, do your thing. But to be honest with you, there's really no point in having these stars and paying for these stars anymore, because you have such a young core in Minnesota and them, you know, kind of going around one another and just like playing as a cohesive unit. What I'm really disappointed in is the fact that they did this. They played as a cohesive unit and they looked so different in the beginning of the year. Like the way that they were playing like old school basketball was kind of like the Lakers did back in the 80s. Where it was just like the ball never hit the floor. So I had so much, hope for being a Clipper fan who never has hope. I had so much hope because of the way that they were playing, because of the way that they were, the ball wasn't hitting the floor, and they were playing as a cohesive unit. And then the season comes and they go back to their old ways and biff it. But blow it up, guys. I don't understand why this is. Why you're even attempting to keep this core anymore when it's obviously not working, to Grant's point.
Jake? Oh, sorry, Jake, you are muted, my friend.
Sorry about that. I was confused by Lawrence Frank's comments, because originally he said that they can't be complacent and they're aware of that. And then he was asked about the big three and he said, oh, we're going to bring all those guys back. So those things didn't make a ton of sense to me. And if you're the Clippers and you bring those guys back, that's where your capital goes. So you probably don't have the pieces to go out and bring in another impact guy that's going to move the needle the way you need it to. And especially, I mean, if you just look at the Western Conference, OKC and Minnesota are the two teams with these young stars, and those guys are going to take a jump next year, right? So is a fully Clippers team going to beat a team next year where it has a 23-year-old Anthony Edwards who's taken a step, or an OKC team with an SGA and a Jalen Williams who have taken another step? My guess is probably not. And then I haven't talked about Denver, Dallas. I said it yesterday on the show. I'll say it again today. I don't think that you can run it back with this exact group and be surprised if it ends the same exact way. So I know we've talked about it, the Intuit Dome, you go out there, you want to put a good product on the floor, but if you're not winning the games, what does it matter?
Yeah, it's the problem that this team has is they want to be competitive, they want to have superstars, so they've done that, But in Los Angeles, as you guys well know, you have to win a championship, or at least you got to get to the conference finals. And for the last 3 years, this team has failed to get out of the first round of the playoffs. So, listen, I mean, the problem is they don't have a lot of like avenues to success here, GA.
Yeah, no, my whole entire, I had a question for all of you guys. If Bomber's point for the Intuit Dome is butts in seats, because the way that he is doing, having this Intuit Dome, right? It's going to be like cashless, like everything's going to be really easy. There's like, this is the most bathrooms in any arena, so people can go back to their seats. It's going to be a little bit easier for you to get back and forth to your spot. It's going to be a lot more convenient. If he wants butts in seats, then why not give a better product? Because this, obviously, the product that you're giving right now is crap.
Yeah, listen, that's exactly Jake's point and my point exactly too. Is like, sure, you can have this high tech arena. You can have like everything look nice and modern. I mean, look, the Detroit Pistons got a new arena a few years back too, but their team is terrible. So fans didn't show up. So I understand the SoCal thing. I understand that, like, oh, you're going to have four guys from SoCal. Everyone come and watch this. Okay, well, if we come and watch it and you guys are the seven seed or in the play-in, like, what does it matter? Like, I won't want to go out to Inglewood to watch that. I'm sorry. Like, it could be as high-tech as possible, and it could have all the solar panels and bathrooms that you'd ever want. But it's if the team that I'm watching for 2.5-3 hours is playing bad, then what does it matter? It doesn't matter how great, how accessible it is or what kind of food I can get there. That's what matters is the basketball. And listen, I know that Steve Ballmer's made a point about the toilets, and I'm very excited about the toilets. It's very hard to get into bathrooms in a lot of these arenas. I'm looking at you, SoFi Stadium. It's very hard. So I agree with that. That is a big thing. But the team has to not look like toilets. They have to look like a championship team. And with this core, I don't think that's possible. I really don't.
Clipper fans, I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on this GA first come, first serve, just wall that Bombers built in the Intuit Dome. Because to me, it feels like very college student section-y, which is very cool. But I just feel like getting people to Inglewood in the middle of the week on time where that wall is like an intimidating factor is going to be an issue.
It will be an issue, and when they are at 500 and in the play-in, that wall will be half full. I will be in that wall. I will be part of that wall. I will be there, but it will be half full, and I will be moving down to row 3 because of that.
All right, let's just real quick, and we'll jump more in the Clippers before we close out. But Armani Buckets, I want to get your thoughts on this. It's looking more and more likely, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, that J.J. Redick, okay, listen, J.J. Redick is at least currently the odds-on favorite to be the next head coach of the Lakers. You know, Ty Lue makes more sense, but he's with the Clippers. Jason Kidd makes more sense, but he is with the Mavs. You go down the list. I mean, it's going to have to be someone that LeBron James likes. Armani Buckets, your thoughts on J.J. Redick as the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers?
It's going to be someone that LeBron James likes. What has happened to the Lakers organization? This is unbelievable. Have we not learned any lessons from history? First-time head coaches, a guy with no head coaching experience. You're really going to sign up for that. By the way, I love the J.J. Redick LeBron James podcast. Every single time I listen, I learn a million new things about this sport that I had no idea, no clue of before. I think he's a brilliant basketball mind. But the Lakers, being the Lakers head coach, takes so much. It just, I would want someone with head coaching experience, and I get it. Mike Budenholzer comes from the same coaching tree that Darvin Ham just came from. Yeah. You know what Mike Budenholzer gets you almost every year? Top 3 seed, if not the 1 seed. Every year, you go back to Atlanta, you go to Milwaukee. He's a candidate for the job, but all we hear about is J.J. Redick. To me, this reminds me of when the Nets brought in Steve Nash, and Steve Nash obviously was a more accomplished player, but a guy that had no coaching experience. JJ talks about it on the pod. I think his coaching experience is his son's basketball team that they have to be fifth, sixth grader? Somebody correct me.
Yes.
I don't like that move.
Yeah, I mean, so the problem here is, and we can joke about it, but the fact of the matter is LeBron James in Clutch Sports do run that team. So that's why you'll hear about Trae Young. You'll hear about different clients of Clutch. I don't necessarily big picture think it's the worst. And the only reason I say that is I do remember the Lakers pre-Clutch where they couldn't sign a single top player. Now, I'm not saying that that's the future of the franchise, but I agree with you. But by the way, like, I would like a coach in here with some credibility in terms of a track record of success. But the important thing to keep in mind, it will be a coach that LeBron James has some history with. And so this will be a unique thing to track. I just hope, whether it's on Spectrum Sports or whatever, to your point, that they continued that podcast. I don't know if that's possible during the course of the season where they kind of break down film over a nice glass of wine. But it is a fascinating podcast. But I mean, if you would have told me at the beginning of the season that the Lakers would hire J.J. Redick to be the next coach of the Lakers, I would have called you crazy. Again, no surprise that the Darvin Ham is no longer the coach. I think by the end of this season that there was no way that he was going to come back, certainly when they get booted in the first round. But I don't love the J.J. Redick hire if that happens. All right, let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Clippers, but also talk about the Dodgers, the hottest team in Major League Baseball, when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. Wanted to bring back the topic that we just closed out on, just because I wanted to get everyone's thoughts on this, or at least for Brandon's as well, because we didn't have you on the show yesterday while we talked about J.J. Redick being the current odds-on favorite. Again, that could change. But again, Ty Lue, not in the running. He'll be back with the Clippers. Jason Kidd, obviously in the postseason with the Mavs. He'll be back with the Mavs. Brandon, your thoughts on a first-time, fairly young coach taking over this team?
You know what? I might be in the minority, but I love it. I think J.J. Redick is one of the best basketball minds in all of basketball. It doesn't matter if he hasn't coached yet. Would I prefer a Mike Budenholzer maybe to at least go into the playoffs with a 1, 2, or 3 seed for LeBron? Like, yeah, of course. But I think who can coach and actually outcoach a Mike Malone? Like, Budenholzer can't outcoach Mike Malone. Like, Budenholzer can't outcoach Chris Finch. We don't know if J.J. Redick can outcoach those guys, but I'd much rather take a chance on a guy that has proven to know the game better than 99.9% of people and his homies with LeBron. Like, Mike Budenholzer, we don't know if he's a yes man. Like, you need a yes man to go with, or you have to be buddy-buddy with LeBron. Like, no, a certain person has to coach the Lakers. It cannot be like a Nick Nurse. Like, Nick Nurse would get in a fight with LeBron by week 2, and LeBron is like, oh, I don't want to do that. Nick Nurse was like, then get the heck out of here. You're off the team. You know, like, you have to really understand LeBron and understand that he's going to have a say in everything. And that takes a certain kind of person. I think Redick is the perfect person, honestly.
I had no idea that these guys were friends prior to the podcast. I mean, it's like they never played with each other. So I was not that I'm surprised, but like, you know, like prior to the podcast, I wasn't aware that this was a connection.
Well, I also think I wanted to bring up one more thing too. And this might not matter, but it is Los Angeles. It's Hollywood. Reddick is handsome. I think that plays. He's charismatic and handsome as well. And he can coach. So that I'm not saying Darvin Ham was ugly. You know, to each their own. But it matters. It does. It does. Arash, it matters. When you're the coach of the Lakers, when you're in the media constantly, when you can talk to the media, that's important. That's important. I think he's the perfect coach. He's a superstar.
How has that helped Jimmy Garoppolo, your friend?
Well, it got him on the Rams. It got him on the Rams. They wanted a sexy guy off the bench who can come in and, you know, manage football games. It helps.
How about the stray that Jimmy Garoppolo caught on the roast of Tom Brady from Robert Kraft? That if Tom wanted to go play for the Raiders, they already did his favorite thing and got rid of Jimmy G.
Oh, no. Poor Jimmy G. I think he got the short end of the stick in Vegas. I mean, that organization was a dumpster fire last year.
By the way, that was, if you guys have not seen the roast of Tom Brady, which took place at the Forum, was really well done, I thought. Listen, love those roasts growing up. The old Johnny Carson, Dean Martin. So, listen, if you like old school blue comedy, I thought it was really well done. All right, let's now switch gears here, just because I'm very excited about the Dodgers. Not that I was concerned about this team, you know, 24 games into the season and they were around 500. As Jake brought up yesterday, you know, come summertime, like, this team will go on a heater, and that run has started pretty early. Again, when you have the Atlanta Braves coming in and they sweep them, Jake, I want to start with you first. Just the way that this team has played. By the way, great to see Walker Buehler back. I mean, I forgot that he'd been gone for 2 years. It's just, you know, when you look at one of the superstar pitchers that they were thinking, you know, would obviously be like the late Gase after Clayton Kershaw. But great to see him back on the mound. Great to see Shohei Ohtani doing what he's doing. Jake, your thoughts on this team?
Yeah, it was great to get Walker Buehler back. I mean, by his standards, he wasn't necessarily super happy with his start. Went 4 innings, 77 pitches. 4 strikeouts, didn't walk anybody, gave up 3 runs. First start in 2 years, absolutely fine. They won the game 6-3. The biggest concern for me was the bottom half of the lineup. And Andy Pahis has come up and just as a Jason Hayward replacement about a month ago and has absolutely tore it up. There will obviously be some natural regression there as he kind of cools off and the league starts to figure him out a little bit. But he has really provided a spark to the bottom half of that lineup. Blake Treinen just came back. He's healthy. I know Evan Phillips just went on the IL. So it's kind of just like a gain one, lose one kind of neutralizer right there. But they're starting to figure it out. I mean, Mookie's not necessarily doing exactly what he was doing, leading the NL in every single category. But that's just because Shohei Ohtani has gotten red hot and is now leading the NL in every single offensive statistical category, slugging over 700. He's hitting 370. Mookie's hitting 356. Freddie's still hitting below 300, but that's going to obviously figure itself out. I'm not worried about that guy whatsoever. But getting Walker Buehler back is huge. Glasnow and Yamamoto are clearly the best 1-2 in baseball. And if James Outman or Gavin Lux can figure it out at the bottom half, they'll be great.
You know, I wish Ohtani was still an Angel. There was some animosity between me and him, which I was putting in the chat, like he can't hit and runners score with runners in scoring position, which is still true. He can't. Not really. Not to the level we want him to. But maybe he doesn't need to because he's so dang good in the first 7 innings. He doesn't need to. He puts you ahead, right? Like, Ohtani's the best hitter in baseball. I wish he was still an Angel. He made the right decision. I said that when he left the Angels, covering the team and growing up an Angel fan. Like, he made the absolute right decision to go to the Dodgers. The Angels did him no favors over the past, you know, whatever, 6-7 years. And he's just continuing to prove how good he is. And he hit, what, about like 300 on the Angels, maybe 290? Well, now he's going to hit 360 because he has Freddie and Mookie, like, in between them, right? Now you have Pahas. You have other guys that can hit. I'm just glad Outman doesn't have to hit every day. I know he hit a home run yesterday, but, like, man, that guy, he can't be an everyday player, even though his defense is excellent. And Gavin Lux, I mean, I know we talk about the Michael Bush, Gavin Lux thing and debacle and everything, but hopefully Lux can start hitting, because if he can start hitting, that team might be unstoppable, because Buehler's going to be better and better. You're going to get Bobby Miller off the IL soon, hopefully soon, because he can actually pitch. He needs more innings to prepare for the playoffs. This team's clicking on all cylinders. I think we knew this. We knew this would be about a 100-win team. None of it matters until the postseason. So none of it matters until the DS, the division series. So, again, we got to take it with a grain of salt. But I think this is a team well-equipped to go on a deep run.
Brandon, I wanted to get your thoughts on Mike Trout. Again, we've not seen a lot of, like, emotion from him. And it was a pretty incredible when he talks to the media, when he's going to be sidelined for some time. And I think it finally, like, hit him. Like, and I don't know whether he was just disappointed that he's going to be out for a couple of months, but just – it's really sad. Again, we are seeing one of the best players in baseball, and it's just he's stuck on a team that can't go anywhere, constantly hurt. Like, I really hope he doesn't retire without having played, he played in one postseason, did not win a game, but would love at some point for the team to do right by him. And who knows if he doesn't, like, maybe he loves his life so much here in Southern California, but it's just really frustrating to watch. Your thoughts on him being out, but really that moment outside the clubhouse where it just kind of hit him, like, what the heck is going on here?
It's very sad. In fact, he would have been close to 600-700 home runs if he had stayed healthy throughout his career. I mean, he hasn't played over 130 games, I think, in what, 5 years since he won the MVP. He had 40 home. This is how good Mike Trout is at full strength. He had 10 home runs in about 20 games this year, 22, 24 games. By the way, he was on pace for like 60 home runs. And if he had stayed healthy, he was going to hit 50 for sure, regardless of his average, which was dipping, I think, because of the injury toward the end of, whatever. But he had 40 home runs in 2021? I believe in 100 games, just over 100 games. So, I mean, like, that was the season Aaron Judge, broke the record, whatever, for the American League. But Trout would have been on pace with that. This is a guy who's really an electrifying player. It's very sad. I think the Angels at some point should do right by him and trade him. He's loyal. But, I mean, let's be real. The team's years away from competing. The rebuild would be accelerated if Moreno sold the team to a Joe Lacob and it got a complete overhaul, because it seems like they can't develop pitching, they can't develop hitting, and they don't have a good farm system. So it's a complete disaster. I mean, even Oakland, and look, I'm speaking facts. I love the people who work for the organization. I love the people and PR and everything that give me the comfortable situation to cover the team. But we got to call a spade a spade. Like, Artie Moreno is past his stay. He needs to sell for the fan base. It's been years, but he should have sold when Shohei was on the team. He would have gotten a huge deal. Yep. Now it's kind of prideful to him. They're in a rebuilding period. They won't tell anybody, but they're rebuilding this year. The thing is they have some young talent. If they just had an owner that was willing to spend money, and next year you go get a Shane Bieber who's going to be cheap coming off of Tommy John, you get a Vlad Jr. in 2 years, you could compete, but this team's years away and it doesn't fit on Trout's timeline. They should trade him.
Yeah. I'm getting nostalgic, by the way, G-Hay and I were younger. Knicks and the Pacers was such a fantastic series. We had that, Patrick Ewing and Reggie Miller, and now we get it again. And, Knicks winning game one yesterday. GA, listen, as someone who's lived in New York, been back east, I think anytime the Knicks are in the postseason, in the semifinals, we will see if they get to the conference finals. I mean, that's good for the league. There's nothing like Madison Square Garden if one of their teams, either the Knicks or the Rangers, are playing this late into the postseason.
I mean, it's incredible. If you've ever been to MSG, it's just the I hate using this word, but the vibe is palpable, right? I mean, that energy that those people bring is incredible. And even though, I mean, I know New Yorkers get a lot of slack and they get a lot of grief for this, but man, they show up. They show up in the postseason for their teams, specifically for the Rangers. I'm not going to lie. I think that they kind of they teeter in between for the Knicks, because there's just been so much disappointment, I think, over the years for that squad. But for the Rangers, they show up. They show up in droves. They really are extraordinarily loyal It helps that they're a little bit more consistent as far as all the New York teams are concerned. But yeah, it's incredible, and it is great for the league. You have guys like DiVincenzo and Hart, and who played his mind out last night, by the way, absolute mind out last night. And then you have obviously Jalen Brunson, who is just a consistent player, scoring over 40 in four consecutive games. I mean, that's a very short list that he was on. To be able to do that is incredible. It just shows you how great of a player he is and how quick he is. And just also, I would like to point out, though, these guys have been playing with each other for over 6 years, right? They played at Nova together, and they played exactly like this. They played as a cohesive unit. Now they're playing at the highest level you can possibly be on together as well. And for Nova fans, I don't think that this is a shock. I just think that this is a shock for Knicks fans, because they've never seen a squad like this, a backcourt like this, that can play together like this cohesive unit that exists between them, those three. So, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm in shock just because they're a little smaller than what you would want, you know, as your backcourt in today's NBA. But, man, they're killing it. They are killing it. And congratulations to New York for getting game one. We'll see what they do for the rest of the series.
Yeah, to your point, Jay, last player to score 40 or more in four consecutive postseason games, Michael Jordan. And so, listen, like, I think anytime you get compared to Michael Jordan, that's quite an accomplishment. Jake, I mean, your thoughts, I think obviously Boston is the favorite to come out of the East, but, you know, again, for the Knicks to make this kind of run, I think is great for the league. I think there's no doubt that the league would certainly like to see a Knicks-Celtics conference finals. Your thoughts on that series so far?
Yeah, I want to keep talking about Lakers legend Josh Hart for a second.
Yes.
Because he now has 6 double-doubles in 7 playoff games, mm-hmm. 4 of which are 20-plus point, 13-plus rebound double-doubles. And the only game where he didn't have a double-double, he had 17 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 blocks. So somehow Josh Hart's turned into some – and he's hitting down threes at a crazy clip too, which he's never been able to do in his career. So he's turned into like this better version of prime Draymond Green that is this – perfect complimentary piece to Jalen Brunson, who's now just a 40 piece at ease. I mean, I love what the Knicks are doing. Everyone, when Julius Randle went down, this team had really started to hit their stride. He goes down. OG Anunoby just shows up. Isaiah Hartenstein's playing great basketball. Precious Achiuwa is giving them decent backup 5 minutes. I really love the Knicks to take care of that series pretty quickly. I said last night before the game ended in our group chat that I was going to say Knicks in 5. I'll stand by that. I think a Boston Knicks Eastern Conference final would be fantastic just from every single standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, from a competitive standpoint, from just a league standpoint. I think it's great for basketball. Two of the premier franchises in the league and two of the biggest markets in the world. So I would be all on board with a Knicks Celtics Eastern Conference final.
And in fact, I'm starting to get to the point where I can see a path to the Knicks defeating the Celtics. And I never thought I'd get there. Because the Celtics, talent-wise, blow them out of the water. But what the Knicks have that the Celtics, I don't think, have is moxie. Every single play, they're going to die for. They are all together. The Villanova boys have a chemistry I don't think that the Celtics have. Porzingis is hurt. We don't know when he's going to be back, right? Like, even if he is back, like, I mean, Hardenstein's locking him up if he tries to do anything in the post. Like, he's kind of soft, Porzingis. He's a great shooter. If he can hit the ball from three and block shots, that's a huge plus. Horford's old. There are things that the Knicks can exploit with their defense. And they play defense. I mean, this is a theme. Finally, it's back. Defense. Like, right, that's what true basketball, this is what we're seeing. In fact, I think this is the best playoffs in a long time because we're seeing elite defense. This is real basketball. I know GA appreciates that, being a fan of the game and someone who knows ball and loves the college game. I mean, this is defense at a high level right now. The Knicks play that, and I think that it's at least with Boston a 6-game series, even if they lose at this point. And again, I'm not by no means saying the Pacers. Pacers looked way better than anyone thought in game one. And they have a great team, and they're well coached with Rick Carlisle. It's going to be – but I'm just going to say this last thing. I think that both of those series – I think we're going to see the Eastern Conference Finals start like by the end of next week. I mean, I think the Cavs are done in 4 or 5 games. No offense. They just have one player pretty much that can score. So I don't know. Knicks should hopefully handle them easily too.
Brandon, let me get your thoughts on this just because we kind of touched on all the playoff series except for Oklahoma City and Dallas. I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander should win Most Valuable Player unless you guys correct me. But again, that would be an amazing story for Clippers fans who obviously didn't want to lose him just because they liked him. But at the very least, he's a finalist. He's one of the three finalists for Most Valuable Player.
I think Jokic has probably already won. Okay. I mean, that's what I heard in the straw polls toward the end of the. I mean, maybe we see like completely in the straw polls lied and we see something completely different. But Shai has had an excellent year. Thunder are a bit young. They play defense, which helps them. But Luka and Kyrie are like such a good duo. If they can hang in the game, I think the Mavs win this series in six games. I really do.
Wow. Jake, your thoughts on this series?
This is a series that could go either way in my mind. The youth does scare me with OKC, but it really hasn't seemed to slow them down all year. But this could be like a Kyrie masterclass where just from a mental standpoint, he just takes over this series and is able to dissect everything that's going on that floor. And it wouldn't surprise me at all. If that happens, I could see a Mavs in six, but I'm going to go on record with OKC in seven. I don't feel great about taking a bunch of guys who have very minimal playoff experience against Kyrie and Luka, considering that they'll probably be the two best players out there on the floor next to SGA, but I will go with OKC in seven.
Really quick, Jihei, if I had thought before the season, like I was not as high on the Thunder and the Wolves just because I hadn't seen it. Here we are. Wolves are two wins away from being in the Western Conference Finals, and the Thunder, we'll see how that goes. Your thoughts on that series?
As far as the Wolves series is concerned,
Dallas series. Dallas and OKC.
Yeah, no. Well, so for the Wolves, I'm impressed. I still think maybe Denver has a little fight in them. We'll see with Murray, kind of being a baby and not answering questions from the media. But then as far as the latter, as far as OKC, I want to see how good that D is. I want to see how good that D is up against Kyrie and up against Luka. And then I'll make my judgment after that. So yeah. we'll see, Brandon. Don't pause me yet. Don't pause me yet.
Yeah. I was waiting for the pause.
I'll make my judgment. don't pause me yet, but I want to wait until game one, and then after game one I'll make my assessment after that.
I think it's been a fantastic postseason so far. Obviously we all wish that there would have been a local team, whether it was the Clippers or the Lakers, but listen, it's been a fantastic postseason so far. We'll see how this continues, but I really think obviously during the course of this postseason we are seeing the future of the league, whether it's the Wolves and the OKC Thunder, but listen, it's been a fun postseason so far. All right, let's leave it there for now. When we come, let's leave it there for today. And this is Arash Markazi saying so long for now. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.